To all who come to this happy place, welcome.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome once again to the official Disneyland Resort podcast, a unique look at the magical moments and events here at the place where dreams come true. Join us each month as we celebrate the Year of a Million Dreams with a behind-the-scenes look at what's new and exciting here at the Disneyland Resort. And now, here is your host, Michael Gohagan.
Thanks for joining us. As the fairies from Neverland say, the changing of the seasons is like magic. Fall has arrived, and as we look forward to 2009 and ask, what will you celebrate? The magic here at the Disneyland Resort continues with the addition of several new guest experiences. In this edition of the Disneyland Resort podcast, we'll chat with Imagineer Tony Baxter about the enchantment and history of Sleeping Beauty Castle. He'll tell us about how his team of Imagineers is using new technology to reconstruct the classic castle walkthrough. And we'll stop by Disney's California Adventure and hear from the Wildcats of Eastside High as they kick off a brand new celebration that will have you dancing in the streets. First, fairies have descended upon Disneyland Resort, and with the help of a little pixie dust, they're transporting guests deep into the heart of Neverland to a special place called Pixie Hollow. Tinkerbell is your host for this all-new encounter where you'll experience the enchanting world of fairies. For the first time at the Disney theme park, you'll meet face-to-face with Tink and her friends Fawn, Silvermist, Iridesa, and Rosetta. Disneyland Resort show producer Ray Coble tells us what guests will experience when they arrive at Pixie Hollow.
Guests will enter the queue. They'll see bronze statues of the ladies along a stream bed. Beautiful new landscaping is along the pond and the stream areas. They may hear some noises that they can't quite make out. Maybe they'll hear some giggles. And as they approach the top of the path, as they enter, maybe they feel like, well, they've shrunk in size a little bit. And they've entered the world of Pixie Hollow. And now Tinkerbell and her fairy friends will be meeting and greeting with our guests for the very first time.
Well, it sounds to me like this is aimed at some of our younger princess and fairy guests here at the resort.
It absolutely is, but as we know, Tinkerbell has a huge fan following from moms to grandmas to our little ones as well. Tinkerbell is very much a fancy and fun character, and we're very excited to bring her into Disneyland and meet and greet with our guests for the very first time.
And what do park guests have to say about the all-new Pixie Hollow?
It was like... It was kind of cool because it's like we shrunk down like really small and we were like the size of pixies. And there was like teacups, as houses, blades of grass, like really, really tall.
I thought it was wonderful. I'm a Tinkerbell fan, so I was excited to get my picture taken with Tinkerbell and the Disney fairies, Silvermist and Fawn. She gets excited about coming in and having a good time.
These two are very into the fairies and Tinkerbell and all the things from Pixie Hollow, so watching them go through it and get pictures of them, and everything was really special and a lot of fun.
And just as Tink and her friends have everyone buzzing at Disneyland Park, Disney's California Adventure is buzzing with Wildcat fever.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and all you Wildcats out there, it's time to rock out with the greatest celebration ever to hit the streets. So come on and party along with High School Musical 3 Senior Year right here, right now!
The kids from Eastside High are back for their senior year with an exciting new street show. High School Musical 3 Senior Year right here, right now. Capturing the infectious energy of the movie High School Musical 3 Senior Year, this interactive musical invites guests to be part of the performance as they sing and dance with the cast. Creating a high-energy show like this takes a talented team of producers and choreographers who work with the filmmakers to make sure that this 12-minute program stays true to the film. Disneyland music director Bruce Healy tells us about the challenges of transforming the film score into a one-of-a-kind street show. Now, with a movie like High School Musical 3, what are the challenges in trying to take established music like that and transition it into a street show here at the Disneyland Resort?
Well, we're wanting to present the best in live entertainment at the resort, and we need to be able to adapt the music as it's performed in the film for our live performers. That's the biggest challenge, because in the film they have the opportunity to create their story and use up close visuals with performers and different kinds of shots and things that brings focus to those performers. But in our environment, we have, in this case, four live singers that represent all of those featured vocal parts, and we don't have the advantage of close-ups and two shots and things like that. So we have to do a remix of the show and a rearrangement of the vocal parts that are sung by the featured performers.
So what's the process to achieve that? I mean, how do you go about actually doing that?
Our creative team comes up with a concept, and in this case, it's about presenting the music in more of a concert presentation. The team comes up with a flow and an outline, if you will, of what this live performance presentation would be. So all of the musical material is identified, and then we go start looking at it in terms of how does it flow, and we'll make maybe edited versions of these pieces of music. And after we've done that and we get a feel for the flow of it and everybody's happy with that, then we start to get a hold of the real elements from the film and re-edit those elements and remix those elements, and then create our live performer's script that says this singer is going to sing Sharpay's part, and this singer is going to sing Zach's part, and this singer is going to sing Vanessa's part. But we don't identify them as those characters. They're just really great live singers performing that music. So we arrange it in that way so that it's effective for those four performers, two females and two males.
What, if any, interaction is there with the people behind the film itself?
We have a lot of interaction with the film team. Our director, our producer in particular, work with Walt Disney Pictures Group to identify all of the issues and preferences that they would have and what goes into a show like this to make it fit the purpose and reinforce the brand and make it so that the audience makes a clear identification between our show and the film.
Now, in a situation like this, now that you get to see an audience watching this show, what's your goal for them to experience?
Our goal for them to experience, of course, is just plain fun. You know, how much fun can we have them have and hope to convey to them? So we integrate live, in the live performance of the show, audience participation moments. And so that brings people out of the crowd. And that's always a great crowd pleaser for our guests, because they get to see somebody that they know get up there and be part of the show.
While in the park, we got a chance to catch up with a cast member who performs in High School Musical 3 senior year, right here, right now. Jenny, tell me a little bit about what it's like to perform in this new kind of street spectacular.
It is absolutely amazing. We've done High School Musical shows in the past, and it's been a lot of fun doing sort of like a review of the movie, but this is like rock concert all the way, just going for it, and the kids are really, really responding well, so it's the most fun I have working here so far as doing this show.
How would you describe this for somebody that hasn't seen it?
You know, I would probably tell them, I mean, it is like a rock concert. That's really what I would say. We have dancing, we have lights, we have singers, we have crazy costumes that just look awesome, and the performers out there are just amazing. So it is quite the experience.
And I noticed in watching it earlier today, you're kind of up on this fancy stage, so you get a good view of the show.
We do. We are up there, we're up on the float, and we get to see everything. We can see for miles, and I can see all the kids, and they're enjoying it, so it's awesome being up there.
What's your favorite part of the show?
Oh, you know, it's probably I Want It All, because we get to play our little characters, you know, and it's up and down, and again there's all this dancing, and it's the biggest number definitely of the show, so that's my favorite.
High School Musical 3 senior year, right here, right now, is rocking daily at Disney's California Adventure. And don't forget to catch High School Musical 3 Senior Year, the film now playing in theaters.
This is Ronald Reagan again. And I'm very happy now to show you these young people. Since Disneyland opened, these children have been eagerly waiting to cross the moat for a wondrous trip through the Disney imagination. They'll be the first children to enjoy the Fantasyland rides, every one of which recreates the adventures of characters Walt has immortalized in films.
Open the Fantasyland Castle in the name of the children of the world!
Since opening day, millions of children from around the world have crossed the same drawbridge through Sleeping Beauty Castle. Recognized as one of the most famous and adored buildings in the world, it's the original of the five Disney theme park castles. Did you know the drawbridge in front of the castle has only been raised and lowered twice? Once when the park was opened in 1955, and again in 1983 for the rededication of Fantasyland. In 1957, Disney architects added a new attraction that allowed guests to walk through the castle and view several dioramas depicting the story of Sleeping Beauty. Recently, Imagineers began playing with the idea of restoring the walkthrough, using the original dioramas while adding new technology to enhance the story. We met with Imagineer Tony Baxter and Art Director Chris Merritt to talk about the walkthrough project and get their insight on one of the most recognized buildings in the entire world. Well, we're outside in front of Sleeping Beauty Castle, and something very special is going on inside Sleeping Beauty Castle.
Well, this is a really exciting time for us. We just completed work on the 50th anniversary DVD and Blu-ray disc, the first Disney Platinum Blu-ray disc, and of course, the chosen film to inaugurate Disney's animation line was Sleeping Beauty. And as part of that, the studio came to us and they said, is there something really special that we could put on this DVD that would make it unique and something that, frankly, no other company can do? And that is show some way in which the story of Sleeping Beauty was here and a part of Disneyland. And it turned out, of course, that in the early days of Disneyland, Walt Disney had actually opened the castle here, which was here on opening day, but 2 years later, he opened a very special exhibit inside to tell guests about the upcoming release of that feature film, which would not come out until 1959. But in 1957, Shirley Temple came down and in the spring of that year, dedicated the castle. And for 2 years, our guests at Disneyland were able to go through and they got a magnificent book at the end of it that I remember. I think I still have mine from when I was a wee tot. But you unfolded it, and this was a film that was shot in Technirama, and that meant it was extremely wide, wider than CinemaScope. And in this book, there was a page that unfolded into this spectacular scene that was going to be in the movie. So it was a fairly, you know, I think we had it as a B ticket, but boy, getting that extra book for free at the end of it made it something that you would always use your tickets on the castle, and I must have had a stack of these books because it was really very cool.
Well, now, inside, it sounds like you're going to be able to go back and see some of these original scenes that were in there.
Well, the exciting thing that we did for the DVD and Blu-ray disc was we were asked to recreate this exhibit. So Chris Merritt and I began going through the archives, and we found that Ken Anderson, who is a longtime animator and architect, had been asked by Walt to come down to Disneyland, scope out the castle, and develop architectural drawings that were based on Ivan Earle, who is the film art director, based on Ivan Earle's drawings from both the movie, and then Ivan did preliminary sketches of all the scenes. They weren't buildable, so Ken, of course, then had to try and translate those into working drawings. So we thought it was fantastic because we found this cachet of all of Ken's original drawings, and we were able then to construct kind of a recreation in models of what Ken had done. And it was absolutely imperative to do that because the special effects which were developed for this castle would go on to become the mainstays of the Haunted Mansion and Pirates of the Caribbean. But they were all pretty much first shown to the guests in the castle, and they're very complicated. And the only way we could figure out how they worked and what was going on was to build these models And then there'd be these eureka moments where everyone would go, oh, I see now this image over here went through this and passed through the mirror and went over to here, and it looked like there were demons out there, you know. So it was that kind of experimentation and finding out. And it the model work informed the studio so that there are CG artists who took our work, you know, in the model, and then Chris actually directed the painting of all of the sets, where we had to repaint them again, and that was then wallpapered into the DVD, and you'll actually see the artwork that we did at Imagineering wallpapered onto the sets created at the studio in the computer. And it came out so well that I said, well, why don't I show it to the new management at Disneyland? They probably don't even remember that period in time. And so we brought it down in rough form, and we had Ed Greer and all of his team in a room there, and they saw this and they went, we had this at Disneyland? I said, yeah, it was last seen by our guests in 1977. And he goes, how do I get in there to see this? So Ed came immediately out in the park, and it was like opening a door, cobwebs, people hadn't been in there for like 5 or 6 years. And but the skeleton of all the places where these magical scenes had happened were still there. So he came back from that and said, what do we have to do to turn this on? And so that's been the start of a big adventure for the two of us.
Well, Chris, what are some of the things that a park guest can expect to see in there? What are some of the scenes?
Well, if you take a good look at the DVD or the Blu-ray disc, you'll get a good sense of what we're doing in there. Like we had said before, we're trying to bring it back to how it was in 1957. We're bringing back scenes like the burning of every spinning wheel in the kingdom, where you're going to see the fire, which we've worked very hard to make very stylized and look like the original painting by Ivan Earle, actually animate and come to life in front of you. You'll see things like Maleficent summoning her demons from her tower off in the distance, once again, very stylized. And, you know, the goal for this recreation of this attraction that Tony set for all of us was to make all the sets look like Ivan Earle had hand-painted them himself. We're doing that, and to boot, we're trying to do it in blacklight using blacklight colors. So it is a pretty tough challenge and pretty sophisticated. But I think guests are going to be really surprised, because really what we're doing is we're taking the kind of classic 1950s Fantasyland dark ride approach, which originally, some of your guests may not know, or some of the listeners may not know, were all done with scenically hand-painted flats by people like Ken Anderson and Claude Coates, to give that sense of forced perspective, since they didn't have the money to build these sets in full dimensionality. And that's what you're going to see come back in the castle. You're going to see very little dimensionality in these scenes. It's all going to be very theatrical, hand-painted, extreme force perspective, done in that Ivan Earle style. And I think we've got some very magical special effects that people are going to see along the way.
And this is something that a family can walk through at kind of at their own pace, is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a return to the classic walkthrough attraction. So what you'll be able to do is you'll be able to come on into the castle, walk through at your own pace, take a look at each of the scenes, spend as long as you like in front of each of the windows, and move on to the next one. And we're going to be telling the story of Sleeping Beauty. And once again, it'll be at the original park's original icon, which is fabulous news for all of us.
Well, now, when we were walking through earlier, you shared with me some interesting stories about some of the things that you found inside the castle, some kind of archaeology. Can you share those with us?
Well, you know, the castle has had three incarnations that we know of. When the park opened from 1955 to the opening of our interior show, it was basically open air. So there were areas in the castle that are now indoors that were once balconies and arcades, that when we started peeling the layers off, we got through the layer that was most recently in there. Then behind that was a painted layer where the entire interior of the castle had been hand-painted, again in the style of Ivan Earle. Behind that was fully carved dimensional walls that had been a part of the arcades that once had looked out into Fantasyland. And originally Walt thought he'd allow the guests to walk out of the show and then promenade along the edge looking out into Fantasyland and then go back into the show. And that didn't work out. So all of that disappeared and was encased in these layers. So we've had a ball. Like at one point, there was a sign above a doorway that said, "This way to Maleficent's goons." And there was a big sign above the thing and above the archway. And then beyond that were keyholes, where the guests were able to look into these keyholes and see their eye actually projected into the face of a demon. Well, it was fascinating. And people would stand for literally minutes staring in these keyholes. And then other people would say, what are those people seeing in the keyholes? And the result, the line went all the way down through the castle. And I think probably within a year after the opening in 57, they were all boarded up. And that isn't the end of the story, because Roberta Brubaker, a park employee here, saw that there was space somewhere up there that, you know, no one had access to. So she peeled away a layer, and she found those little characters that have been entombed in the wall since 1957. And so they're now in good hands, and again, you'll see them on the Blu-ray and DVD version. But then Chris, when we were looking at where this was all taking place, looked up above, and he could see that they'd put in a piece of masonite. And he peeled it off, and behind there was the original artwork that said, "See Maleficent's Goons." It's still been in the castle all this time. So he's now restoring that so that we'll have a different wording on it, because we don't want people backing up. But you are going to get to enjoy some surprises and scares with Maleficent's Goons.
I thought one of the most interesting things that you showed to us was that the walls were actually hand-painted. You pulled off some of the plaster or whatever it was, and then there was the actual hand-painted wall behind it.
Yeah, we're calling it theme parkeology now. It's really great because, you know, you would think that these things wouldn't have survived. Certainly, they were created in 57. I don't know exactly the date when the fiberglass rockwork went up, but I don't remember ever seeing anything different. So that might have actually been put in before the redo of the show in 1977. When we were looking at the original blueprints, you know, it was called out scenically painted throughout the castle, and I thought, well, there's no way they hand-painted Ivan Earle level brickwork throughout the castle. But every single place we've had to take a wall down or move something around, we found those hand-painted walls. And the great thing about it is now, in the case of the Goondor sequence, we were actually able to save enough of the panels of the walls, and two of the actual Goondors were sitting behind the fiberglass. We've got them all in storage now, and the archives are interested in taking them on. We can recreate the entire 1957 Goondor sequence as it was seen by 1950s guests in a museum show or an exhibition. And I just think it's really fortunate, because if we hadn't had the chance to do this project, they'd still be sitting underneath the fiberglass rockwork for who knows how long.
Well, this sounds like just another classic and great example of taking some of that history of Disneyland and injecting it into an attraction people that can see now, but you can also kind of harken back to that original history of the park.
Well, you know, I think the reason that there's such a celebration around the film is that it's of such extraordinary artistry. Everyone from the classic animators on down would herald it as probably the zenith of the quality and the perfection, the pinnacle of perfection in traditional 2D animation. And so people have, I think, in our era today, 50 years later, a huge appreciation for that level of quality in the painting and so forth. So to have the opportunity now to play this show and its beautiful artwork for an audience that I think is so much more ready and perceptive than in the 50s, where they were a little more innocent and they kind of expected it. Now that we know how hard it is to do that kind of work, I think it's going to have a tremendous effect on our audience, just relishing something that's done with that extraordinary care and finesse.
Well, thank you both so much for taking the time to share with us about this new addition to Sleeping Beauty Castle.
Great. It's been our pleasure.
As the finishing touches are being put on the castle, the work has just begun across the way at Disney's California Adventure. Did you know the Blue Sky Cellar is now open for guests to take a look at what's ahead for the expansion of Disneyland Resort? At the Golden Vine Winery, near the base of Grizzly Peak, Imagineers have set up shop, converting the cellar and wine tasting area into a working studio. There's a screening room, workstations, drawings, and models of all the upcoming attractions, including plans for the newly envisioned Paradise Pier area. You'll view artwork at the new park entrance, which will bring to life a nostalgic look at Los Angeles from the 1920s and 30s, and also get a glimpse of Radiator Springs and the all-new Cars Land. You'll even be able to test your knowledge of Disney trivia at one of the interactive workstations. Blue Sky Cellar is open daily at Disney's California Adventure. Well, that'll just about do it for this edition. If you enjoyed the show, please feel free to share it with a friend. And remember, we have both audio and video podcasts available at disneyland.com/podcast or in the iTunes podcast directory, where we also always appreciate feedback. While you're there, be sure to check out the newest video podcast. Until next time, I'm your host, Michael Gohagan. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Disneyland Resort Podcast. And don't forget to join us next month as we continue to celebrate the power of dreams during Disney's Year of a Million Dreams.